Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a collaboration with KCBX and its team of program hosts. Our topic for today's program is Voices of Change, Youth Organizing Through Education and Activism. Today, Mario Espinoza-Kulik speaks with two dynamic local leaders from Santa Maria. We invite you to listen, learn, and participate in our conversation today on Thursday, live between 1 and 2 o'clock. You can call in and be part of the discussion at 805-781-3875, or you can email your questions to voices@kcbx.org, and we'll follow up on them after the program. Right now, let's join Mario and his guests. Over to you, Mario.
Good afternoon and welcome. Thank you. My name is Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. Today, we're exploring the deep connections between education, cultural identity, and youth-led social movements. Our guests are two community leaders whose work centers on empowering young people through both classroom engagement and grassroots activism. Joining us live in the studio are Maestra Patricia Villalobos, Spanish and Ethnic and Gender Studies teacher at Ernest Righetti High School, and Cesar Vasquez, a Central Coast-based community organizer and activist. Thank you both so much for being here. I wanted to start off with Maestra Villalobos. If you could please introduce yourself in your own words and just tell us about how you got into the role that you're in today.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me here. My name is Patricia Villalobos. I am a woman who uses her voice to speak up for what I believe in and to uplift others. I am a single mother of two beautiful daughters, Anya and Amelie. Anya is at UC Riverside, and Amelie is a student at Lompoc High School. I've been an educator activist for 22 years. 20 of those years, I've worked in the Santa Maria community. My roles there are being an educator, being a mentor, being a club advisor, and a community member. So my journey into teaching began when I was really young. Like, I remember playing games with my friends and siblings where I pretended to be a teacher, and I would assign homework to them, and I would have them complete this work, and I would give them, you know, feedback on how they were doing. And I just remember feeling so joyful, seeing others learn and find their passion along the way. And so I feel like this calling to be a teacher was in me at a very young age. And then as I, you know, continue to navigate the educational system here in the U.S., it just became clear to me that higher education could open a lot of doors of opportunities, opportunities that could help me and others advance financially, socially, make change in our communities, and really make a difference. And so through my college years, I feel that I fully embraced my identity, my cultural heritage, and the idea that I definitely wanted to give back to our communities through education. And so I feel that those experiences have led me to become the educator that I am today, where I, through my teaching, I center student voices and their stories. I cultivate empathy for one another. I also emphasize self-worth. I want my students to see the value that I see in each one of them. And I also instill a sense of agency in them. I want them to know that all the education that they gain, all the knowledge that they have, they can go out into our communities and do something with it. And that is the point of our education.
Thanks for the work you do. Cesar, how about yourself? Can you please let us know your journey into the role that you're doing right now, shaping this journey for youth organizing?
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, first of all, thank you so much for having us, you know, having me here. You know, it's an honor to be here and share my voice. Mi nombre es Cesar Vasquez. I'm currently 17 years old, and I started organizing, you know, and being involved with activism when I was 13 years old. I started organizing because, you know, some people close to me, pushed me into it. I was 13 years old. They offered food and money, and that's enough for any 13-year-old to get involved. But very quickly, you know, I started realizing how much work there was to do, and how many little people were actually doing the work. Right. And so very quickly, my passion and my love for my community grew, and I started getting very involved. One of my earliest memories, you know, of being involved with activism was actually with Lata, you know, your co-host, where she asked me to speak at the Women's March in Santa Maria. And I was 14 years old, maybe at that time. And since then, you know, I've focused on numerous different issues, stopping development, focusing on environmental justice, immigrant rights, field worker rights, education, equity, and reforming the education system in Santa Maria, advocating for women's rights and gun, and being against gun violence, you know. And so I've tried to stay where the community needs me, you know, and listening to the people around me. Right now, all my focus is primarily on defending immigrants across the Central Coast, but across the United States and across the world, right? There's so many injustices that have been occurring to the backbone of America. And my priority right now is to ensure that the narrative is changed and that the world knows that immigrants and the indigenous population really are heroes in our community and not the villains that history has written them to be. I've been doing this for, you know, almost 5 years now. When I was 15 years old, I founded La Cultura del Mundo, which is an entirely youth-led organization. One day I woke up from a nap and I had a dream of having an organization. You know, I texted one of my friends, Lily Sanchez, at 9:10 o'clock. And I just said, hey, I have this idea. And she said, you know, you're crazy, but I'm going to support you. And from there, you know, we just started doing workshops. We got a few grants. And over the past 3 years, you know, we've been able to serve over 600 community members in the Central Coast area through educational workshops, and now shifting our focus into defending immigrants, providing them with the resources they need. And as of right now, trying to reform Santa Maria as a whole to support immigrants, and also organizing a national protest to defend immigrants across the world. So, yeah.
It's really important work.
Thank you.
And Maestra Villalobos, I also wanted to ask from your perspective, you know, as a teacher, when young people learn about topics like identity and culture and social justice, what kind of impacts do you see that having on students?
So, first of all, I think students gain so much from learning about these topics in a safe, comfortable environment. So I've seen students sometimes come into my class not feeling a sense of belonging. Sometimes they feel like they can't connect with the school, like maybe they don't feel like they're part of the school, that they have a say in what happens in their school. Sometimes their family, sometimes they feel like, you know, they're not understood within their family dynamics. Or sometimes at the community level, like they don't know what impact they could have individually on the community. And so when they start learning about these kinds of topics in my class, they begin to feel a sense of belonging, like, oh, okay, so I could, you know, get involved with this local nonprofit and maybe help with, yeah, like immigrant rights or, you know, the homeless. I could maybe also support, you know, people with disabilities. And so they feel like they're not, you know, on their own, mm-hmm. and that they could actually connect with communities when they learn about these topics. I've also seen students embrace their identity more because now they understand what are all the different sections of identity. Like in my class, we introduce the topic of intersectionality, right? And how identity has all these different layers, and we don't explore all of them, but we begin to explore some of them, like, you know, what's your ethnic label, your race, what is race? Let's define what race is, what ethnicity is, and what about your name? You know, where does your name come from? And your gender and socioeconomic status. And so once they begin to understand what all these different concepts are and how they define who they are, they also begin to understand themselves better and embrace their identity in a way that empowers them and gives them a sense of confidence and, okay, this is who I am. In my classes, I've heard students use the term, no soy ni de aquí ni de allá. Mm-hmm. See, they feel like they don't belong, like we're not accepted here, we're not accepted over there, especially for our immigrant students. And that's one of the first things that I challenge. I tell them, we are going to create a new narrative. We're going to say, soy de aquí y soy de allá. Mm-hmm. We belong here and we belong over there, whatever the over there is. Could be any other country or culture if you're bicultural, et cetera. And so those are the kinds of topics and new perspectives that I want my students to be exposed to. I also have seen students learn new vocabulary to talk about the things that they've lived through. And it makes them, you know, realize that they're not alone in their struggle. For example, I had a student this year, a freshman, who through her Loteria project explored the idea, her own experience of being a translator for her parents from a very young age. She had to go to doctor's appointments. She had to translate like legal documents for her parents. And so she did research on this topic and she realized that there's a term for it. It's called language broker. And she learned that academics are writing about this topic, analyzing it, discussing it, and she felt so validated, like, oh, my God, this is important stuff, and I should be sharing it and talking about it. And so that's so beautiful for me to see in my students. Others just begin journeys of healing trauma, sometimes breaking cycles of traumas in their families when they are exposed to these topics. But I think the most important thing and the most important, like, impact that I see in my students is how they find their voices and how they feel that somebody's seeing them, somebody is listening to them, and I want them to know that their voice matters and what they have to say matters. And I think that's the biggest impact that I've seen in my students. It takes courage to open up and be vulnerable about who you really are and everything that is within you and that you've carried on your own. And I've seen many students throughout the years, like, break out of that shell and begin to really share about who they are at a very deep level. And I think that's probably the biggest impact that I've seen in my students.
Yeah. And so, and from this conversation about, like, the types of character building and inspiration that students gain from topics like this in the classroom, how would you say student leadership develops? Like, how does this contribute to your drive as a community organizer? You know, is there an outlet for students that can pour this into, like, a student club, like Latinos on Needles or something like that?
No, yeah. I think right now, you know, it's very important for students and youth, you know, from all different backgrounds to really get involved with developing their leadership, you know, and ensuring that their voices are heard. Because right now, you know, we are in a time and in a place where a lot of the people that should have a voice are becoming voiceless. And it's very important for youth to get involved and to figure out what keeps them happy and what makes them happy, right? Because activism isn't for everyone. Mm. You know, being a public speaker and being out there publicly isn't for everyone. Some youth, they want to focus on art. They want to focus on making events happen, you know. And I think it's very important to support youth with where they're at and meeting them where they're at instead of trying to shape them into this new person, right? And I think that's been an issue, especially within the Hispanic Latino community, where a lot of parents and a lot of individuals and older individuals try to shape youth into this new person. And I think it's more important to meet them where they're at and develop their skills into becoming this leader in their own way in the community, you know. And a lot of that starts in the classroom. A lot of that starts very young, right, with kindergartner and elementary school students, you know, that passion for art or leadership grows there. I started getting involved with my student council, I think, in fourth grade. Right now I'm here, and it's because people helped me develop my skills instead of turning me into this new person that I'm able to be here. And so it's very important to reform these classrooms into places where we can continue to develop students instead of shifting them into new people. Right. I played football my freshman year, which isn't that public because I wasn't the best. But one time my coaches said that character isn't built, it's defined on the field. Right. And it's the same thing with classrooms, where the character is defined and it's not built. You know, it's not a new person being developed, but it's just a person breaking out of their shell and becoming this leader in their own way. So I hope that answers your question. Yeah,
definitely. To join in and ask a question of our guests, you can call 805-781-3875 or email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. I'm Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. As we continue Central Coast Voices today, our guests are Maestra Patricia Villalobos, Spanish and Ethnic and Gender Studies teacher at Ernest Righetti High School, and Cesar Vasquez, a Central Coast-based community organizer and activist. Thanks for sharing with us about how you got into your roles and the inspirations for your journey into inspiring, you know, really a generation of movement leaders. I want to see how education and activism informs one another through this next segment, and how both teachers and organizers alike can support our young people into becoming leaders and to act intentionally and with purpose and in this fight for social justice and liberatory praxis. You mentioned that you are mobilizing, you know, in our community, Cesar. What are some of the current efforts you're supporting on the Central Coast?
Yeah, so here in the Central Coast, you know, I'm really trying to change the narrative, you know, that people see immigrants, you know, not just here in the Central Coast, but throughout the world. A lot of the focus that I've been spending my time on recently, you know, and it's become a full-time unpaid job at this point, you know, waking up at 5 a.m. up until 12, you know, just continuing to do the work, is, you know, just supporting immigrants across the Central Coast and ensuring that there is a voice for the voiceless. There are a lot of people right now who are afraid to speak up, who are afraid to go out, you know, to buy groceries, to throw the trashes, because they are so afraid of the current administration. And I am trying my absolute best to reform the narrative and change the system so that they can feel safe again. I mentioned earlier how I started La Cultura del Mundo earlier to bring youth into these leadership positions and to, you know, meet them where they're at and to support them into becoming these leaders in the community. And right now I have this amazing team. Our youngest team member is 12 years old, all the way up to 24 years old, and they're making every single decision. They're deciding where our very small amount of funding goes to. They're deciding what to say at public comments, you know. Just this Tuesday, we were at the city council meeting in Santa Maria to ask them to change the color of the vests of city rangers, just because so many times in today's, you know, day and age, city rangers are being confused for immigration officers and La Migra. And so we're really trying to change that so that there's some security there. And, you know, we're currently organizing this national protest to change the narrative and defend immigrants across the U.S. You know, that comes with the law, you know, very busy times, but it's very important to continue fighting and to continue bringing hope to the communities especially in the Central Coast and, you know, across the world.
And you did mention having, I think, spoken at the Women's March. Do
yes.
you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I think I was 14 at the time, you know, Latin met me at a march to fight against gun violence, and she heard me speak there and wanted me to speak at the Women's March. And there, you know, I spoke about the injustices that a lot of women feel in our community. You know, I was raised by a single mom for, you know, a portion of my childhood, and I have three sisters. And so I've been raised by women, you know, and speaking for them. I remember that was a really tricky time, you know, just because I didn't feel like it was appropriate for me to be there as a man. You know, but after speaking with a lot of, you know, powerful and, you know, a lot of women that I look up to, you know, they told me to be there and to speak on their behalf because they weren't able to be there. And from there, you know, I worked on a lot of different campaigns over the years trying to get the A-G's passed in Santa Maria so that students would have students would know that they could at least get into a college and apply for a four-year university. I also spent a lot of time here in San Luis Obispo working on environmental justice and encouraging low-income housing, you know, so that people like my parents can afford housing, you know, throughout the whole time fighting for field worker pay and increasing that to $26 an hour so that my parents can finally feel like they are living and not just surviving. And now with our current administration, shifting our focus on defending immigrants. So, yeah.
And Maestra Villalobos, how do you see educators, and not just educators, but adults, enabling leadership roles for young people? And so how do we equip students to sort of like engage in this current day political environment, and just like the real world in general? How do we enable students to thrive as leaders in this world?
Yeah, that's a great question, right, for us to reflect on, especially in the educational system. Because education is not just about teaching students to read, write, and do math, and think, you know, learn science. It's so much more than that. We have such a unique opportunity to help our students find those inner talents that Cesar was talking about earlier. Like each person has their own strengths and their own talents that they can lead from. Not every leader looks the same. But sometimes what it takes is for one person to believe in that child and to tell them just the right words for them to, you know, have something like spark, something that lights up inside them that they had not felt before. And so, first of all, I think as educators, we got to make sure that we are uplifting our students and we are giving them those opportunities to look within themselves and find their talents, their strengths, their own passion. And for that, we got to be able to help our students feel that they are being seen and that they are being heard. So, for example, with the Loteria Project that I mentioned earlier in my class, I feel that one of the things that I accomplished with that project is it's very student-centered. So I'm basically telling my students, here's a platform for you to speak about the topics, the issues that matter to you. What is it that is going on around the world or the community or at a personal level that you want others to know about? And what is it that you want them to know? What message do you want to put out there? Or do you have a consejo, advice? What is it that, you know, adults should know about the things that you're going through? And so for me, creating those kinds of spaces in my class is so important, where students feel seen and heard and letting them know that they matter. Because once I build those relationships with them, once we have that trust built in, they are going to flourish and they are going to become wonderful people that are going to find their passion and lead from again, that inner strength. So I would say definitely a holistic approach to education where our students feel seen, heard, and supported by us educators.
And Cesar, in terms of like the community and spaces, like family spaces and just like circles of respected community members, people who make decisions, how can those folks make space for young people to make their own decisions and develop as leaders?
That is an amazing question, and something that really needs to be talked about, you know, today. I think for a long time, youth have been really overlooked in history, have been written out of history or haven't been acknowledged. And I think right now it's really important to make that space and to welcome them and to hear them out as people, right? Not just as young people, but as people. I know for me, it took, you know, 3-4 years for people to even listen to me as a leader instead of a youth leader, mm-hmm. right? I, for such a long time, I felt taken advantage of in ways by organizations, you know, because I felt that they were using me because I was young, you know, and it wasn't until recently where people have acknowledged my voice because I was a person, right? And so I think the story needs to shift and the wording needs to shift, and it shouldn't be how can we open spaces up for young people, but how can we open up spaces for all people, right? How can we make an all environments and inclusive environments so that young, old, you know, middle-aged, brown, white, black, you know, all people can come together and cultivate ideas together and, you know, bounce ideas off of each other and really create organizations and spaces and circulos that encapsulate everyone instead of just a specific group, mm-hmm. right? So my focus has really been making sure that everyone is heard, right? Even with my youth-led organization, it's very focused on the youth, but we have so many adult allies where they are listening to the youth as people, and not just as youth, but as people. And we are listening to our allies as people, right? Because that's the story that needs to be told right now in the world, is that we are all equal, that we are all there, we are all here to support one another. And so we make these spaces by ensuring that the stories being told are changing.
We're going to take a short break to hear from our team, and we'll be right back on Central Coast Voices.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, women who wake up at 3 a.m. to make lonche for their husbands, are they MAGA coded like the larger so-called trad wife movement? Latina trad wives, MAGA or not? That's next time on Latino USA.
On the next Fresh Air, Life as a Failed Child Star. We talk with Tamara Yahia about growing up in Argentina, at 11 performing an imitation of Madonna, becoming a popular singer and dancer, and later realizing she was sexualized as a child. In her memoir, she also writes about immigrating with her family to California and nearly getting deported. Join us.
The mood among California farm workers these days? Fear.
Most of our workforce has been here for a long time. I think that the average years in the U.S. is upwards of 10 years.
I'm Kai Rizdal, Immigration and the Food Supply. Next time on Marketplace.
Author Honoré Fanon-Jeffers has written fiction, but when she decided to trace the stories of her own family, she was worried.
I was really afraid that people would feel like I was betraying my parents, and in particular, my mother.
I'm Juana Summers. My conversation with Jeffers about her new collection on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's a look ahead to our Thursday here on KCBX with Latino USA, following this program today at 2 o'clock, followed by Fresh Air at 3, and then a look at the day's numbers on Marketplace at 4. Right before, a look at the day's news on All Things Considered from 4:30 to 6:30. Right now, let's return to Mario Espinoza-Kulik and his guests on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Mario.
Thanks, Brad. Welcome back, everybody, to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik, and our guests today are Maestra Patricia Villalobos, Spanish and Ethnic and Gender Studies teacher at Ernest Righetti High School, and Cesar Vasquez, a Central Coast-based community organizer and activist. Students have been at the heart of social transformation, especially late in the news, as we've seen from walkouts to campaigns for justice. And even with today's young people, we must acknowledge this support with femterships, mentorships, and resources, as well as other powerful drivers of change that enable our students and young movement leaders today to challenge institutions and redefine what our social systems can and should look like. And so I wanted to start with you, Cesar. What movement or movements are you a part of, and how do you see your role within them?
Yeah, thank you for that question. You know, I've been thinking a lot about what I'm fighting for and my overarching goal, right? And a lot of people have asked me that, you know, throughout the years, just because my work has changed, you know, throughout the years. They've asked me, you know, what are you fighting for? And I think right now I've come to the realization that my goal as a person and as a human and in this greater movement, you know, this national movement, is just to bring hope, you know, and to bring hope to people across different communities of different backgrounds, to know that they can stand up and that they can fight against oppression that has been on them for so long, you know. And I think fighting for hope and advocating for hope in many different lenses is so important right now. You know, recently I've taken a lot more of a leadership role, you know, and advocating for immigrant rights in Santa Maria and across the Central Coast and, you know, nationally too. I'm organizing this national protest, you know, and with that, I'm trying to cultivate these relationships across the world. And so this morning, you know, I woke up at 6 a.m. to speak with organizers from Washington. And yesterday it was organizers from Colorado and from Florida, right, to cultivate these relationships and the system of trust across the USA so that we can advocate for each other. And so, you know, you asked me what my role is, and I hope that people see me as a bringer of hope and a push for hope, you know. And there's this quote from Star Wars that says, you know, that resistance is built on hope. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm advocating for.
Amazing. Maestra Villalobos, how about you? What movement would you say you're part of, or movements?
So I feel that the movement that I'm involved with is breaking traditional teaching methods through the classes that I have right now, especially my ethnic and gender studies classes. I originally started with a committee in my district, the Ethnic and Gender Studies Working Committee, back in 2017. That's really where that work started, like truly started. And it just continues to shape, you know, how I teach now. And so at first, it was a lot of going to trainings and understanding what is ethnic and gender studies and what are the benefits of teaching this type of curriculum for our students, and what do they gain? And well, there's just so much there for our students. They gain a sense of agency, embracing their identity, cultivating empathy, giving back to the community, feeling a sense of belonging, becoming agents of change. And so I feel like that's the movement that I am definitely like more inspired to continue to be a part of. And now I've taken it outside of the classroom. So I'm not just, you know, working with the students in my class. I've also been presenting workshops at different conferences throughout the state, like CLTA. I also wrote an article about my experience for CABE, and they published it in their latest magazine, the Multilingual Educator Magazine. I've also been presenting with the World Language Project through Stanford. And all these presentations that I do, all these workshops that I'm presenting and that I'm a part of, are centered on the work that I do with my ethnic and gender studies classes. And so I want other educators to also use these methods of teaching these counter narratives and centering our student voices and letting our students know that their stories matter in the classroom to further the work that I do. And so I feel that that's where my passion is now, and I see myself continuing to do this kind of work. Hopefully, you know, at a bigger level. Right now I'm presenting here statewide at different conferences, but maybe in the future, you know, taking it further and, again, continue to spread this kind of work, because I see the impact that it has on our students, and it's very wonderful.
Congratulations, first of all. That's amazing work.
Thank you.
And, I mean, that's just so inspiring. As like many educators, our classroom is sacred, right? Like, all of the work, like, happens in our classroom, but there's no reason why we need to contain ourselves to the limits of the classroom. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you.
And Cesar, I wanted to ask you, who are some of those figures who inspire you? And what about their legacy are you carrying forward in the work that you're doing?
Yeah, you know, my biggest inspiration are the people who got me to the point where I'm at, right? Both my parents, they're field workers. They came from Mexico when they were 16 and 14 years old. You know, they've been picking strawberries and working in the fields for over 30 years. And it's that dedication and that power that they bring to the world that has continued to, you know, push me forward. You know, I mentioned earlier how I was basically raised by my three sisters, right? And they're absolutely amazing. One's a teacher in LA. Another one is studying in the UK. You know, I have my 14-year-old sister, and she's just starting to talk about boys. And so that's scary, you know? But there's just the people who constantly give me power, right? I definitely try to learn a lot from the leaders in the past, right? A lot of these monumental leaders that a lot of us know and learn about in school. And I try to learn as much as I can from them so I can do the work efficiently and correctly here today in today's day and age. But my inspiration and my power and drive comes from the people around me, right? My team right now, they're just absolutely amazing. There's one 12-year-old individual, you know, who's never spoken up and who honestly should have no reason to speak up because she should be born into a perfect world. But unfortunately, she's not. But she's bringing so much creativity and so much power to this movement that, you know, I never expected. There's these two amazing, you know, individuals who graduated with me that I had never met while I was at Santa Maria High School. And, you know, they started to get involved and they're teaching me so much, you know, and they've never been involved with anything. And it's these people around me who are coming with these ideas and this passion and this hope that give me the hope to continue working, right? There's amazing organizations across the world who are bringing people together, you know, and it's such a scary time, but I try to focus on the hope. Right now, there's an organization called 805 UndocuFund in Santa Maria that is bringing so much security and hope to the Central Coast, you know, that they're out there. You know, a lot of the volunteers were, you know, they're out there from 4 a.m. to, you know, 11 o'clock at night, making sure that the streets are safe, you know, from ICE agents. And so there's just so many people doing amazing work that fuel me, right? I try to be the voice for the people who allow me to have the voice and try to make sure that their voices are channeled, you know, and that I can use their words in a productive way. So, yeah.
Excellent. Maestra Villalobos, how about you? Who inspires you in terms of carrying the work forward?
So I really had to think about this one. And I think in general, women have always inspired me to do the work that I do. Deep down, I've always felt this need to speak up against systems of power and injustices, and some of them have to do with, you know, the patriarchy, and just knowing as a woman that I also have power and I also have value in the world and I can do anything and everything that I set myself to, and modeling that now for young people. I have two daughters, and so now I have two young women in my life that continue now to inspire me from their own perspective, from their own lived experiences. And so now I also get to be a role model for them. But I definitely feel that a lot of my inspiration has come from just women in general. I always look up to, you know, the teachings of my mother, my grandmother. Both of them I consider strong women. Women that I, you know, definitely look up to for the values and their principles and how they raised, you know, their families. And, of course, just my dad, too, my parents in general. Just like Cesar mentioned, my parents are also immigrants, and they came here with big dreams. And I want to be able to honor that. Every day with the work that I do, I want to honor my parents, but also all the other immigrant people that come here with big dreams of making a better life for themselves and getting ahead and giving their children a better future. And so all those people are in the mix of, you know, those that inspire and motivate me to continue to do the work I do.
Yeah, that's amazing. There's this saying that we say in our families, lifting as we climb. And you know, it basically in practice, making sure that that other people are inspired by the work that we do, and yeah, even within our own family. And so I just wanted to ask you, Cesar, like you mentioned this with your own youth organization, mm-hmm, but how do we extend invitations for folks to join this work in our movements?
Yeah, I think it's important to know that everyone is welcome, you know, in the movements that I'm organizing in, you know, Santa Maria. You know, there are people who I'm working with who have never been involved. There are people I'm working with who have been involved for years, you know, and so it's important to bring everyone together, you know, from all backgrounds, because we really, if we want to fight for a better world, we have to get there through the methods that we envision this better world to be, right? If we want a world that's full of inclusivity, then we should organize in an inclusive way that brings everyone together. And so, yeah, if, you know, you're out there and you don't know how to get involved, but you want to get involved, you know, just please reach out to me. You can reach out to me through my email at 805-CESARVASQUEZ@gmail.com, and just let me know that you're interested and or that you want to help. You know, we need help. We need people making the art. We need people making the clothes. We need people to give us ideas, you know, and we obviously need funding. And so, you know, if you're out there and you want to support in that way too, you know, we'll accept it all. So, yeah.
I'm Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you recently joined us for today's Central Coast Voices and you want to listen to the entire broadcast, you can. It will be available on our website at www.kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you'll find this show and many others to choose from. You can also find this episode and all our past shows by searching Central Coast Voices wherever you get your podcasts. As we wrap up our time together, I'd like to consider how our listeners can put what we've discussed and learned today into action. And to remind you all, our guests today are Maestra Patricia Villalobos, Spanish and Ethnic and Gender Studies teacher at Ernest Rigetti High School, and Cesar Vasquez, a Central Coast-based community organizer and activist. We've been touching on the topic of organizing a national march, yes, a few times now. And I wanted to ask you, Cesar, if you could share a bit about the upcoming protest, La Marcha de la Puebla, Heroes Not Villains.
Yeah, thank you. So La Marcha de la Puebla, Heroes Not Villains, has really been my baby, you know. I started organizing this maybe a month and a half ago with the intention of bringing immigrants in the Central Coast together. But after sharing this with organizers across the U.S., we agreed to make it a national movement, you know, and a movement that is coming together through solidarity and unity. And so La Marcha de la Puebla is really meant to spotlight immigrants across the world and to show that they are heroes and not villains. And, you know, this movement isn't limited to Hispanic and Latino and Spanish speaking, you know, but European and African immigrants and Asian immigrants, you know, and all people from all backgrounds across the world to come together. It's being organized by my amazing team, you know, here in Santa Maria, and we're pushing out the flyers, the advertising across the U.S. and ensuring that it's one movement, you know. And our goal is to really change the narrative, right? With the No Kings Day protest, we saw people protest and come together to attack one person. And that's, and you know, that's very understandable with our current state of the world. But what I really want to do is to change the narrative from attacking one person to defending millions and millions of people across the world, right? And so instead of focusing on just this one president, it's focusing on the people that have continued to keep this country running. Our goal is to create these safety nets across all these cities that are protesting across the United States. Right now, as of today, we have 21 cities that have agreed to protest with us, from Hawaii to Maine. And we only went public with this on Tuesday. And most cities that are organizing, they're going to be passing these resolutions at a local level, at their city level, so that there can be these safety nets across the United States, and from there pushing other cities to do so, pushing states to do so, so that we can revolutionize the world and America from the bottom up instead of the top bottom, you know, but leading this movement with love and hope and empathy and ensuring that it's a peaceful movement so that we can practice what we preach. If we want to preach for a better, peaceful, loving world, we must get to it by being loving and peaceful and hopeful. So, yeah.
Amazing. That's amazing. And you said you started planning this about a month and a half ago?
A month and a half ago, you know, and since then we've got a website up. We got a GoFundMe up if you want to donate. Our website is laculturadelmundo.org. Or if you want to reach me, you know, you can email me at 805-CESAR-VASQUEZ@gmail.com.
Thank you. Maestro Villalobos, how have you seen movements like this pop up over time? Like, how do we get involved in national movements?
So one of the ways that I've connected students to these kinds of movements is by creating units and lessons that bring these campaigns and these movements into the classroom. So they kind of naturally connect. So I'll give an example. When I've taught about Central American history, so Civil War of El Salvador in the 80s, they used to recruit children for the war, children as young as 9, 10, 11. And so there is a campaign called Red Hand Day, and it's a campaign that is out there and it's still active that is, you know, trying to stop this practice of recruiting children for war, because it still happens in different parts of the world. And so after we would finish the unit, I would have students participate in that campaign. I would tell them about what the campaign was about, and basically, I was putting red paint on the palm of our hands, rubbing them together, and then stamping, you know, our images of the palms of our hand on a white piece of paper, and then writing a message of protest of why, you know, children should not be recruited for war. Children should be in schools, right? Learning and doing other things. And so that's one way that I would get students to think about how they could get involved with campaigns or movements. And then a few years back in 2021, 2022, in our community, I also saw students organize to remove the logo from our district, we used to have a ship, and it reminded everybody of, well, colonizers, right? Columbus, and what that meant for our indigenous communities, and what that brought about. And so our young people, I saw a lot of young people in our community organize behind that. They wanted that logo removed and another one to be brought in that would be more representative of what our district, you know, should be doing in serving the community, which is a very diverse community. Well, a lot of Latinos in the Santa Maria Valley. And so I saw a lot of young people get behind this movement and get involved, and they accomplished it. They got it done. Now we have a different logo for our district. So some of it is very organic. And it just kind of, you know, appears. And then other times I feel like I've connected the students with the movements in a very intentional manner through the content and the lessons that I create for them.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, that's really important. Just like being able to show folks that these things aren't out of reach, that anybody can participate. Anybody can be active in a movement and without having to be intimidated. Right. And so I really appreciate the work that you do in your classroom. I appreciate you, Cesar, for the work that you're doing in the community. And you know, you said this earlier, and if you could please remind our audience, for folks that like want to take action but doesn't know quite like how to begin, because there may not be experience enough, like what would you tell to those people?
I was 13 when I started. Right. I had never been involved. I had never cared before. Right. I came into this space not knowing anything. I was an ignorant 13-year-old kid. And it's taking that step forward, you know, and just taking that leap of faith that things will work out. That's all that's needed. Right. And it's a lot of times a lot of people feel very hopeless right now. But if you're feeling hopeless, then that means that you have this, I guess, that you're craving hope, right? And so if you're feeling hopeless, that means you're craving hope. And if you're craving hope, then that means that you can be the person who brings hope to the community. And so if you want to be involved but you're scared, you know, my piece of advice is to do it, or one day, you know, you're going to wake up and you're 70, you're 80, the world has gone to complete unimaginable levels, and you're going to wake up and wonder why you didn't bring hope earlier. And so start today, you know, start now.
Yeah. And how about you, Maestra Villalobos? What would you say to somebody?
Well, as I say, Maestra, the first thing I always tell my students is you gotta take time to understand the issues. So let's start by learning about what it is that we want to get involved with, because how can you make change if you don't understand what you're trying to change? So first, we got to understand what it is that we want to, you know, make a difference in. And so that's where I would, you know, advise people to start. And once they have that, they can look to the past for examples of how change has taken place, because we're standing on the shoulders of people who have done this for many, many years, before us, in many different ways, many different areas. And so to know how we can get involved, we got to look to the past. And again, it's all about education, to see how we can, you know, step in, because as Cesar mentioned earlier, there are so many ways to get involved. Some people do it through art. Others do it through public speaking. Others do it through organizing. Others do it by making phone calls, donating time, giving, you know, if you have resources, other resources that you can give the movement, you can. And so once you understand what it is that you want to get involved with, then you can figure out, how is it that I can get involved with this issue? And I also liked what you said earlier, Mario, about that. When you're rising up, you're also uplifting others. It just brings this image to my mind of a chain created by humans. Like one arm is lifted up because somebody's pulling you up, and the other arm is reaching down because you're pulling somebody else up. And so if we just continue to do that with each other, we can do so many things together collectively.
Yeah. Thank you. And do you have any last words for our guests or for our audience, Cesar?
Right now is a time to speak up, to come together and to fight for a better world, you know, through love, peace, and empathy. And so if you want to get involved and make a change so that one day you can wake up knowing you were a part of the change and not the reason that oppression continues to affect people. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And Maestra Villalobos, any last words you'd like to leave our audience with?
Yeah, I would say don't be afraid to take the first step and get involved. Every voice matters. Every person matters in a movement. Just, you know, make sure that you also understand the big responsibility that you have when you're part of a collective vision. So it's not just you. It's not, you know, just you on your own. You're part of something bigger than yourself. And also, you know, be aware of that. I would definitely say it's a big responsibility when you're doing this kind of work.
I appreciate you both so much for the work that you do in our communities and for spending time with me on Central Coast Voices.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We hope that you'll tune in next time for Central Coast Voices on Thursday, July 10th at 1 p.m. with host Fred Monroe and his guest, Professor Michael Lattner, who will be discussing equal protection under the law. Central Coast Voices is co-produced by the show's hosts in collaboration with KCBX. We depend on folks like you to continue these programs, so please donate today or become a member with your monthly donation online at www.kcbx.org. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinosa Kulik, and thank you for joining us today.